What is that when you jump around and carry on and do the who dat stuff?
Who dat? You know, that's really kind of a fan. You know, that's our chant.
Duncan Holder Podcast here, back at you. Larry Holder, Jeff Duncan here on the Athletics Podcast Network. Of course, by now, loyal listeners, first-time listeners, welcome. But, of course, you could certainly jump on the Duncan Holder Podcast train in multiple ways. TheAthletic.com/Duncan Holder, 40% off of your annual subscription. You get all of our podcasts, all of our great coverage in print version of New Orleans, every market in the country, the UK, Canada, you name it, we're all over it. You can get all of that coverage through theathletic.com/Duncan Holder. And if you want to subscribe through Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can certainly do that. Rate, review, subscribe, the Duncan Holder Podcast. And Jeff, look, I feel like I've missed you, my friend. I took a step away. Mike Sando tried to take the podcast away from me, and you two guys are going to do it. So I hope I can live up to Mike Sando's expectations now.
Yeah, Duncan Sando was a one and done for Duncan Sando. No, we missed you, bud. I really did. I missed having you on. Obviously, you are the train that drives this podcast, and it wasn't the same without you, but Sando did do a good job. I have to say he was excellent, as we knew he would, and it's good to have you back.
I appreciate you letting me back, Jeff, since I'm on the back half of Duncan Holder. But look, we are all amateurs to our very special guest, a good friend of ours for many, many years. And I wonder if he's going to be unnerved, because look, we've had him on radio many times back when we did radio. He is the king of radio. And I'm wondering, this long form, he sounds a little nervous. So I'm just going to open it up for our good friend, Todd Graffanini, the voice of the Pelicans. Todd, you're on the Duncan Holder Podcast for the first time. How are you, my friend? Appreciate you jumping on.
I am doing very well, gentlemen. It is an honor and a privilege, and I am a little bit nervous because I'm used to doing these things on your side. I've not been the subject of said podcasts in the last few months. So this is definitely going to be a different experience for me, but I'll try to do my best.
Well, you know, the advice always, Graf, when you feel a little nervous, alcohol. That's always the answer.
Yep.
You know, yep. So, and I mean, it's happy hour. It's got to be happy hour in the Graf household, right?
It's happy hour everywhere sometimes. you know how that works, especially with the two hooligans running around all day, which I've been around 3.5 months straight.
As in your two children you're talking about.
As in, yes, my near 8-year-old and 3-year-old. So, yes.
Yes, absolutely. You would be used to traveling the road and this, that, and the other, and doing games and not having to be daddy daycare slash daddy
teacher.
It's
funny you said that, because I was actually thinking about this yesterday, and it has been easily 30 years since I have been in this city this long and not gone anywhere. There's no, going back to 1990. I mean, obviously I haven't been anywhere since we came back from Sacramento that night. So March 12th till now, I have pretty much not left the city proper in any way, shape or form, other than going to play golf about an hour away, but that's it. So it's been 3 decades since I've been in New Orleans this long and not traveled anywhere. It's nuts.
Yeah, and Graf, you've done a few trips to Ireland, right? I mean, I know you love that, right? Didn't you? When's the last time you went to Ireland?
Almost a year ago to the day. I think we left last year on June 28th. So yeah, thinking about that too. Of course, we've gone. You know, my wife's parents are from Ireland, Jeff, and I've been so fortunate to be able to go. You know, we went on our honeymoon, which was my first time. And, you know, my wife, when she was growing up, I mean, they would go nearly every summer because all of her aunts, uncles and cousins are over there. And, you know, it's crazy because we went on our honeymoon, and my daughter, who, like I said, is about to turn 8, next month has been four times already, or three times, I should say, And my son, who is turning three in September, has been twice. So it's crazy. You know, some people never get a chance to go in their entire lives, and my kids have been multiple times, but it is challenging to go over there with very young children. The flight back, I would not recommend on my worst enemy with very young kids, but it's all worth it when you get a chance to go over there. And it's so much better, Jeff, when you actually have family and you're able to stay with family and not have to stay in a hotel or anything like that. It just, the experience is so much better.
Well, Todd, I remember a year ago, and we're doing this by design because we're recording this on Wednesday night and on June 24th. And then June 25th is when the Pelicans officially announced you becoming the radio play-by-play voice, replacing a good friend of ours, Sean Kelly, who moved on to ESPN Radio to call national college football games. Todd, take me through this past year. I know it's hard to do in one simple question, but take me just through this year of a whirlwind where, look, you get this job and then you're walking into Zion Williamson and you're walking in from Tulane to the Pelicans. And now you've gotten to these unprecedented times like we all have where you're stuck kind of waiting around to see when the season is going to start. We know when the season's going to start, but it's certainly going to be a different dynamic.
Well, you know, Larry, and you go back to last June when all of this really started. And like you said, it was announced officially on June 25th, 2019, but I had an idea a few weeks prior to that this was going to happen. So if you go back to the month of June a year ago, and I can tell you, it was as good a month as I've ever had in my entire life when you're talking about what you were going to expect as far as me personally. You know, there were so many things that happened during that time. And it really started out with, first of all, the Pelicans offering me the job before any of it came out. And then you go through the night that Zion Williamson was drafted first and the party on Fulton Street and doing all of that. And then on June 22nd, and I know this because it just popped up on Facebook a couple of days ago, my wife threw a surprise 50th birthday party for me, which I had no idea what was going to happen. So that was a big, you know, rush for me. And then the news came out officially on the 25th. And then, like I said, we went to Ireland 3 days later after that and were there for 2 weeks and then came home and actually walked into the building for real on July 16th. So you go through all of that, which was just such glorious times for me personally. And then to get into covering the Saints on a daily basis for training camp. And then when that kind of tapered off and after the Saints preseason schedule ended, that's when I really got Pelicans heavy and we get into it. And then the season starts and, you know, of course that's a big high. And then Zion Williamson gets hurt right before the season is supposed to begin. So then it kind of deflated a little bit. And then of course we had a 13 game losing streak, which was a very difficult thing. And then you go back towards Christmas time last year and it's a plus again because the team started to play well. And then Zion comes back on January 22nd. I mean, I can go on and on and on. I could just tell you this. It's been one big roller coaster ride, if you want to cut it really, really short. But I wouldn't trade it for anything because I've had the time of my life.
Well, Graf, I mean, you were so well known as the voice of Tulane Green Wave Athletics. We all know you had so many great calls there over the years. Now you've made this transition to the NBA. You've had 64 games, not counting preseason, under your belt. I'm just curious, what's the transition been like? What's the difference between calling an NBA game and a college basketball game? I'm sure there is a big difference. And, you know, how would you describe that transition that you've made?
It hasn't been that bad. You know, Jeff, there's always some trepidation. There's always some doubt when you've never been at this level before. And obviously, I've been calling college athletics for nearly 30 years. So you never know. I mean, you think that you have done enough where when you're calling a big league game, be it what it, if it would have been NFL or Major League Baseball or even the NBA, that you've done enough where you've prepared yourself and you're ready for that, but you never quite know. And I guess the one thing that has been satisfying to me in these first, you know, few months of my tenure in the NBA was, you know what, I can do this. And all the stuff that I've done at Tulane, it paid off. And I am able to do this, you know, without much transition. I will say this. The one thing I was glad when I actually started calling NBA games was that there was a preseason. Because in college, there isn't a preseason. You basically put the headsets on game one of the football season, the basketball season, and the baseball season, and you go. There's no warm-up. And the old saying is it's like riding a bike. Well, that's kind of true. But in the NBA, it wasn't like riding a bike because I'd never done it before. But doing those five preseason games really helped me when we actually got into the regular season, because obviously you're going through format and the new way as far as the broadcast, how it was going to shape out. But the actual calling of games, you kind of learn pretty quickly how fast of a game the NBA is. And that's really the biggest difference between NBA basketball and college basketball, is how quickly they go from front court to back court, or back court to front court and vice versa. You're calling a lot more things in a college game because the speed isn't as quickly. For instance, in a college game, you're going, well, so-and-so brings the ball across the timeline. In the NBA, they're already across the timeline by the time, you know, you really get into it. So there's not a whole lot that you're going to say in a backcourt sense. Most of it is front court. A lot of it's one-on-one. There's much more spacing in the NBA because of the way where the three-point line is and because of the width of the lane. So it's a different game in that sense. But once you really get into it, it is just basketball. I mean, obviously, the guys are a lot bigger and faster, but the game is the game. And it does help that most nights there's at least 17, 18,000 people in the building, which really helps the energy level, though I really didn't need that much help in an energy level type of sense in college. But it doesn't hurt when you've got that many people in the background.
You are Mr. Energy. Like, that's one of the reasons why you were hired. I always like to tell this story. Todd's heard it a million times, but it's funny that anytime I would run into Dennis Lauscha, of course, president of the Saints and the Pelicans, he'll say hello. He might give me a jab for being a Rummel guy since he's a Jesuit guy, and then ask how Todd Graffanini's doing, because Dennis went to Tulane, and always they're always asking how you're doing. So when this job opened up, you know, I figured he'd be a shoe-in, and obviously he was. Todd was, and so you know, you were known for your energy. I mean, how many times do people that maybe don't know you or not like your friend talk to you about your calls and just how energetic you are? And let's be honest, and Tulane knows this. Tulane's had some poor seasons, and you've made entertaining games and drawn people in, even though maybe the teams weren't as good.
Yeah, Larry, you know, a lot of the times I've had to kind of draw from my own passion and energy to kind of fill, because let's be honest, a lot of the times wherever I was, be it in the Superdome when Tulane was playing football, or at Fogelman Arena in Devlin Fieldhouse, or even at Turchin Stadium in some of the leaner years, there just weren't a whole lot of fans in the stands. So, you know what, though? I never really thought about it that way because, first of all, I was doing exactly what I wanted to do at the place where I wanted to do it. And my love and passion for Tulane came out in the broadcasts, and it came that way because I was rooting for Tulane when I was 10 years old, 11 years old. So I was yelling at TVs and screaming at radios, listening to Don Crockett, before I knew that I was or wanted to be a radio announcer. So basically what you're hearing me calling a game is what I was doing when I was a kid. So there really isn't a whole lot of difference in that. Just I've always been that way. I've always been passionate for Tulane. I've always been passionate for the Saints, as you guys very well know. You've watched games with me. And again, I was like that when I was a teenager. So I haven't really changed that much. I've just gotten a lot older. But the passion and the energy has been the same. And now I've got the years and the games under my belt where you can keep the passion and the energy and have a good way of broadcasting a game in a technical sense. So I'd say it's the best of all worlds.
Well, Graf, your timing could not have been better. And I know you know this, but you jump on board with the Pelicans and Zion Williamson joins the team. I mean, this kid is a global phenomenon. You know, I don't even think New Orleans knows quite even yet what they've got in Zion Williamson. He's just scratching the surface coming back from that knee surgery. What's it like calling a game with Zion Williamson on the court and the alley-oops that he is already developing this chemistry with Lonzo Ball, these incredible length of the court alley? I mean, what's that like for you as an announcer?
Well, first of all, Jeff, you're exactly right. Timing is certainly everything. And I was thinking my lucky stars last June when we realized, we knew that the Pelicans were going to have the number one pick in the draft and that Zion was going to come on board. So, yes, it was extremely fortunate that the job opened up and I was able to come in. But, you know, the thing, you see these things on the court, and it's amazing every single night what he does, because he's so athletic and he is just, you look at him and you don't realize what he can do in just an explosive way that he plays the game, and the quick first step and the leaping ability. And you would not know that he is able to get up that high, because if you just look at his build, you'd never think about it. And he's unbelievable, and he's only going to get better. I mean, he's still a teenager. and we're just scratching the surface of what he is going to be. And New Orleans is so fortunate to have this kid as, you know, going to be the face of the franchise for the next decade, hopefully, and more. But what people don't realize, Jeff, and what I've learned when you're traveling with this young man, is the amount of media fans that you see where every single place we go. And I'll just give you an example. One of the early road trips, when we go to Minnesota and we land in Minneapolis, and we're in December. And as a matter of fact, we were still in that losing streak. Actually, I take that back. We were going to Milwaukee because he was not traveling back then. We were in Milwaukee, and we land in Milwaukee, 1 o'clock in the morning, and we get to the hotel about 1:30, quarter to two, and there are people waiting outside the hotel in frigid temperatures, just waiting to get a look at this kid or somehow get an autograph, or whatever, a basketball or a poster or a Duke jersey or what have you. And I'm thinking to myself, this is crazy. I mean, go to bed. What are you doing out here? It's freezing. And then you go into the arena and every camera, Jeff and Larry, every media camera, every iPhone camera is trained on Zion. Wherever he went, he's got, everyone's looking at him. And he just goes about his business. And I could tell you, I would go nuts if that was happening to me. And he just, I don't know how he does it, but he does it. And he always has a smile on his face. And he does every media request. You know, they don't overload him with it because everywhere we go during shoot around, they want to talk to Zion, all the visiting media. So he does his media obligations and he's got a smile on his face and he goes about his business. That's the stuff that people don't see when you're traveling with him. And like I said, he just sloughs it off and does what he needs to do. And we go from city to city and it's the same every single time, what I just described. And it doesn't bother him. And I don't know how he does it.
Todd Grappinini, the Pelicans radio play-by-play voice, joining us right here on the Dunk and Holder podcast. Back half of this podcast, we'll get more into Zion, how the Pelicans are going to be moving forward as they go to Disney World, as what it sounds. And then maybe we'll get a little more inside baseball with Todd's career in the back half of this podcast. But before that, look, top performers in business and sports often attribute their success to their morning routine, whether it's waking up early, setting their goals for the day, exercise, or meditation. But not everyone has the time to do it all. With Hydrant, you can jumpstart your mornings. Hydrant creates flavored electrolyte package you mix directly into your water to make hydrating your body easy and delicious. Each rapid hydration mix has the four essential electrolytes your body needs. Sodium, potassium, magnesium, and zinc help you hydrate quickly and stay hydrated all day. And Hydrant is backed by research. The formula was developed by Oxford scientists to provide perfectly balanced, efficient hydration. There's no synthetic colors or artificial sweeteners. The formula is vegan, and you can choose between three different flavors or a variety pack. Hydrant starts at just $1 a packet for 30-day supply. You can save even more with a monthly subscription. And for 25% off your first order, go to drinkhydrant.com/football. That's drinkhydrant.com/football for 25% off your first order. drinkhydrant.com/football. All right, back here on the Duncan Holder podcast, Larry Holder, Jeff Duncan here with Todd Grappinini, the voice of the Pelicans radio play-by-play. And Todd, you mentioned you're now obviously chronicling one of the biggest superstars in the NBA, even at such a young age. And you're now a year in almost in being the Pelicans radio play-by-play voice. But earlier in our conversation, you talked about how long you did Tulane and called games for them. And you said, look, that was what you've always wanted to do. What in this industry, when you got into it, was your dream job? Because look, a lot of times people run into their dream jobs when they're 25, when they're 40, you're 50. Like, what was your dream job and what was your kind of trajectory in your mind where you wanted to go and where you wanted to be as a broadcaster?
Good question, Larry. Very good question.
I've always got the zingers.
I'm incredibly
impressed. This is your life, baby.
You must do this for a living. Ask people questions.
Barely.
Yeah.
Barely.
look, I got into it early as a baseball announcer. You know, I was very fortunate in that instance. And I mean, we could go into that too. You know, and I've always said from the get-go that I would not be here right now if it were not for Ken Berthelot, who was the voice of the Tulane Green Wave from 1985 to 2001. And I was very lucky that, you know, I had played college baseball And I actually played a year at Northeast Louisiana, which is now UL Monroe. So I had obviously a background in college baseball, the game. And my brother Kyle was a freshman on the Tulane baseball team in 1992. Well, at that time, I was just about to get out of school. You know, I was on the longer plan as I graduated from Loyola here
and didn't become a lawyer or a doctor.
No, it was you know, let's just say that I was a classic underachiever in school, but I was still in school and I was in the communications program at Loyola, and I already had an idea of what I wanted to do as far as going into communications, because look, my grandmother, rest in peace, had tape recordings of me when I was 5 years, 6 years old at their house in Bonneville, calling the Saturday afternoon Wild World of Sports boxing matches with my grandfather. So I'd always had a microphone in front of me. I mean, it was just a natural progression. I loved having a microphone and being able to speak in it. So, you know, long story short, my brother was on the baseball team, and I knew Lenny Van Gilder, who was the SID at Tulane at the time in 1992. And I was up in the baseball press box at the old Turchin Stadium, and I introduced myself to Ken Berthelot. And I said, "Mr. Berthelot, my name's Todd Graffanini. You know, I just wanted to introduce myself and say, hey, you know, I want to do what you do one day." And he goes, "You know, that's great. Well, I'm not going to do the Ken Berthelot voice right now because I could." But says, "Well, look, is that your brother on the team?" I said, "Yeah, actually it is." He goes, "Well, he's a good player." I said, "Well, he's a good player. I mean, I was better than he was, but yeah, he's a good player." He goes, "Well, look, we got a broadcast on Wednesday, and how'd you like to sit in for a couple of innings?" And I said, "You got to be kidding me. Of course." And that's literally how it started. And, you know, I tell people, you know, they ask you, how do you get into the business? I said, "Well, first of all, you got to be lucky. Second of all, you have to have an opportunity. Third, when you have that opportunity, you can't screw it up." And I did well enough in that couple of innings that I put those headsets on and knew enough about the game and enough about the team where he asked me to come back. And that was in 1992, and here we are now. So, it's a long story, but I originally got into it to be a baseball announcer. If you want to, you know, go back to the original question, my dream job would have been to be the play-by-play announcer for the Los Angeles Dodgers, who is my favorite Major League Baseball team.
Ooh.
But they had that, yeah, shut up. But I had that, they had that kind of covered with Vin Scully. And I don't think that Graffanini was gonna unseat Vin. So Tulane was the next best thing. And obviously I had a pretty nice run with the Green Wave. And, you know, for a long, long time, I could not have planned anything better for me to be around that program for that long and work with the people that I work with, and especially Rick Jones, who has become like a father figure to me when he got the job in 1994. And, you know, Coach and I have been so close. And you think of all the games that I broadcast with Rick Jones as being the head coach, and the amount of time that I've spent with him over all the years, and the assistant coaches who have become just such great friends to me over the years. I mean, that's, you know, those things are literally priceless. And, you know, when it comes back down to it, I'm just glad I didn't screw up that original broadcast in 1992, or I don't know where the hell I'd be.
Well, Graf, I mean, I'm curious, as an announcer, this is something that I think Larry and I would probably have no clue what the answer would be. As writers, we do all this prep work, right? You know, we prepare to write a column. We're thinking about lines over and over before we write them. You know, I can remember at the Super Bowl down in Miami, having a column written if the Saints won the Super Bowl, and a column written if they lost. That way I was prepared either way. But as an announcer, I'm curious, I mean, how much of it is organic? Do you just feel the moment before you make the call? And how much of it is planning and preparation?
Another good question, Jeff. I can honestly say, in all of my years and all of the games I've ever called, I have never prepped for a line to say during a game. It has all been organic. Any moment that you've ever heard me, you know, yelling like a fool, it's literally what I'm saying is what I'm thinking at that very moment. The key is you have to be prepared in whatever sense, in knowing the team, in knowing the situation, and you have to draw upon all of your experiences that you've had calling said games. When you get to that moment, you can't screw it up. So if that makes sense, because there have been a lot of moments that I've had over the years where you look back and you listen to them again going, man, I'm so glad I didn't screw that up. But the reason that you don't screw it up is because you're ready for the moment, even though you don't know you're ready for the moment until the moment actually happens, if that makes any sense. But that's really the way I go into it. And so far, and I'm knocking on my forehead, it's served me well, but I will never write down a line going, you know, that's just not the way I'm wired. And I'm never going to do it that way, because
you're not going to be like Zion Palooza. Yeah. Something like awful.
There's going to be, you know, kind of corny sayings that you go, but I'm not writing them down. It's just going to pop up in my head. If I say something corny, so be it. I know I've said corny stuff over the years, but it was never pre-planned or thought out. It's just what pops in your head at the time.
What's your favorite call ever?
Oh man, that's a good one. Well,
I have mine.
I know what yours is, and I could say it's top five because it got me on the map. I had my 15 minutes of fame, and that's going.
That was thanks to Jeff.
It is thanks to Jeff. But for the people that don't know, Tulane was in the Oxford Regional playing Ole Miss back in 2016, and at a jam-packed Swayze Field on a Saturday afternoon with 10,000 people in the ballpark, and Tulane was down by one in the top of the ninth inning. And with Stefan Alamase at first base, Jake Rogers hit a hanging breaking ball over the left field bullpen for a home run, and I literally lost it.
Runner going. Breaking ball drilled to deep left. Way, way back. Get out of here. It's gone. 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 Home run, Rogers. Home run, Jake Rogers over the bullpen. Ask and ye shall receive. Deep, deep, deep into the Oxford afternoon. Hang a bang a baby. Hang them, bang them. 6-5 wave. He got another hittable pitch, and he did not hook that one foul. You gotta be kidding me, 6-5 wave. That's the biggest hit in Tulane since 2005, folks. It ain't even a debate.
It's funny because I started getting texts after that game ended, and then I'm back in my hotel room after we had, and that eliminated Ole Miss in their own regional. So I'm back in my hotel room that afternoon, and it was late afternoon, and I'm getting ready to go to Coop's place. Cooper Manning owns a place, Coop's, in Oxford, just off the square. And of course, I'm going there that night just to have a couple of pops and soak it all in. And I'm sitting in my hotel room and Jeff Duncan, who's on this podcast, obviously, calls me up and goes, hey, we need to talk about this. So Jeff interviews me. And matter of fact, if you Google it, you can still read that. And then Jeff asked me, do you have a call of this? And I said, I don't, but my producer back at WRBH, Del Agnew, who I owe so much to, because if you think about it, that call lasted 1 minute, the way Del Agnew cut it up and put it out. And mm-hmm. Jeff got the call, put it underneath the article, the column, and 2 hours later, I'm sitting at Coop's in the bar watching college baseball on TV, and my phone literally exploded. And that's how fast it happened. And there are people.
Todd, let me interrupt you here for a second, because I'm literally typing this up on Google right now. And it has Todd Graffinini, and one of the first like four choices is home run call, and it's from that.
Awesome. Well,
it literally
and
pops
the thing
up
about
on
it is, if Jeff doesn't put that out, it's basically going to live in the city of New Orleans proper. Okay. People are going to know about it, but you're going to hear it. And that's pretty much it. And it's just, it's another Tulane call that, you know, I have a bunch of them, but nobody outside the Tulane community could give a rat's patoot, you know? But once that went out, then it got picked up by USA Today. It got picked up by Bleacher Report. And little separate articles came out in these websites with the call. And that's when it went viral. And my life, as far as a broadcaster, was never the same after that day. So I have to put that in the top five. I absolutely must. Because that was my 15 minutes of fame. Because, and again, nothing against everybody out there listening as a Tulane fan, but, you know, I was a legend at Tulane. Nobody else outside of the city of New Orleans really knew who I was. So all of my, what I thought were great calls, were confined to the Tulane community. And that's all well and good. But this one actually put me on a national map. And, you know, like I said, it's been a whole lot of different for me since that June day in 2016. But for me, my personal favorite call, Larry, was when Matt Groff caught the last out of the 2001 Super Regional at Zephyr Field to put Tulane in the College World Series for the first time because of just what it meant to everyone at Tulane and what it meant to Rick Jones and what it meant to the Tulane baseball community. You know, back in 2001, Tulane was as good as any program in the country. But they had never taken that step to get to Omaha. And when Matt Groff squeezed that fly ball in right and they started dogpiling in the middle of Zephyr Field, it hit me because, look, like I said earlier, I played college baseball, but I'd never been to Omaha. I'd never been to Rosenblatt Stadium. And I told myself I would never go to the College World Series unless the Tulane Green Wave was a part of it. And at that moment, when they were dogpiling and then you kind of step back and you realize it, holy, can you say a curse word on this podcast? I mean, I don't know. Holy shit. I'm actually going to go to Omaha and call a Tulane baseball game in Rosenblatt Stadium. And we just beat the LSU Tigers to do it. I mean, that was a moment that you can never replicate because there's nothing that can equal the first time. And that was the first time. And, you know, I was brought to tears in that post game when the moment actually hit you that this is happening. So that would be my favorite call, Larry, just because of the situation. But yeah, the Oxford call definitely was one that put me on a national type of scale.
You know, that call was so great, Graff, because, I mean, that was a no-doubter, too. I mean, when he connected, you knew immediately that thing was gone. At least I did. I felt like it was kind of a no-doubter. And just the suddenness of how quiet the stadium got. I mean, they were right on their feet, and then it just flipped like that. That's one of the great things about baseball is how quickly it can turn. But I want to switch gears real quick before we wrap up and ask you about the upcoming NBA reopening schedule and what that's going to be like for you. I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to be in the bubble. Are you going to be in the bubble, or how do you call a game if you're not at the game? I'm curious how this is all going to work out.
All right. Well, Jeff, first of all, we're waiting for the schedule to come out now, because we just right now don't know. Now, there have been kind of reports, you know, a month ago, who the Pelicans were going to play, how they were going to set it up. But you really don't know. Now, we have 8 games, obviously, to play to try to get into that play-in situation, or if we really, you know, get hot and Memphis falters, to kind of sneak into that 8th spot. But I think the goal right now is just to get into that 9th spot, get into a play-in situation with whoever it may be. But we don't know until the schedule comes out. But I would think it's going to happen in the next couple of days. Definitely we'll know who we're going to play and when we're going to play, because we really can't do anything prior to that. As far as I know, now this has not been confirmed, but we are going right now under the premise that the broadcasters are not going to Orlando. And this is not just for the Pelicans. This is all around the NBA. And again, that's not official, but that's how we're kind of going in that direction. So it is going to be a challenge for me, if that's the case, to call games off a monitor. I've never done that before. And you got to understand, it's a lot different calling a game on radio than it is on television. When you're calling a game on TV, the pictures are in front of you. So you're basically complimenting the pictures in your own certain way. In radio, that's not how it works. You've got to paint the picture for the listener. When you're going to do it off a monitor, it's different because you don't have the grand scope of things in your sight. You're basically a prisoner to what you're going to see in front of you on a monitor. So it's going to be a challenge. I've actually started to practice it a little bit, watching some Pelicans games that I have DVR'd, and it's a bit of a challenge. I'm not going to lie. Now, you know, your preparation and your knowledge of the team is going to take over, but it's going to be a little bit of a transition in the first game, I would imagine. But other than that, we'll be able to figure it out. But I don't think we're going to be traveling to Orlando. You know, it's been a strict number travel party in the 35 range, and I could tell you right now, Jeff, the radio announcer I would not deem essential when you're talking about the, you know, what they're going to do in the bubble. We can figure it out on our end. We don't physically have to be there now. That being said, when we get into things next year and we get into the new season, traveling and being part of the party and doing the whole deal and being in the arenas, you know, that's part of it. And I would just, you know, clasp with praying to the heavens above that we're able to do this next year and get back to some semblance of normalcy, because that would not be a whole lot of fun if you're going through an 82 game schedule and sitting in a studio or wherever we're going to be broadcasting the game, watching it on a monitor, because that's just not the way it's supposed to be. So, you know, that we're obviously in unprecedented times and completely extenuating circumstances, and we'll make do what we got this, you know, during the stretch. But after that, you really hope that we get back to, the way it was before March 11th.
Well, Todd, look, we really appreciate you jumping on the podcast. Look, we've done numerous radio interviews over the years, but I'm glad you were able to take some time out for The Athletic and for Jeff and I once again. And I'm going to come up with some like awesome catchphrases that you have to use. And I want the credit on the broadcast for now on.
You know, what's my favorite emoji, Larry? What's my favorite emoji?
Oh, it's the eyes closed, mouth closed, just straight lines.
I'd call that one my third. What's the one that I use all the time?
Eye rolls, I guess.
The eye roll.
All I know is the most famous text he always send me is poofed. P-F-F-T, or whatever.
What does that mean, Brett?
That's what it means. Like, get out of here. Are you kidding me? That's P-F-F-F-F-F-T. Exactly.
It's kind of the eye roll emoji. Same thing.
Pretty much. But yes, I've used the eye roll more than any other emoji. So if I start using your catchphrases, Larry, then it's definitely going to be eye roll central. With that, so we'll have to cross that bridge when we get to it, but I'm sure you're going to have some dandies awaiting me.
Oh, so much glory! Absolutely, there's no doubt about it. But no, look, Todd, great insight into just kind of behind the scenes how you got into your career and everything. And it's really, when we're on this side of the bubble, we don't often get asked these questions, so I always kind of find it fascinating when we're the subjects of being interviewed as opposed to us talking about the people we cover. So great job, my friend. You didn't freeze up. Great job.
Awesome. I'm fired up. I mean, you know, I haven't done anything in 3.5 months. I mean, I've done a couple of podcasts and stuff like that, but I got to get back into this, man. I mean, I got to get back to work and talking into a microphone, putting a headset back on. That's what I'm waiting for. So this is good. This is good. I need to start getting back into it because, you know, hopefully in a little over a month, we're going at it full bore again.
Well, let me give a quick plug to Graf. What he has been doing during this break is taking a lot of walks around the city.
Yes.
And if you haven't gone on to the Pelicans website and read his Walks with Graf series, I highly recommend it. It's a great idea for a series. And I know we're wrapping up real quick, but if you can do it really quick, what was your favorite walk? Did you have a favorite walk around the city?
Ooh, I tell you. Now, look, I started with the Uptown Walk because that's the one I've done most of all because, you know, that's my neighborhood and, you know, walking past Tulane and Audubon Park. But it's almost a tie. My mid-city, you know, Gentilly, Fairgrounds, Tad Gormley, City Park Avenue, Roosevelt Mall. That's one I never really expected that I would like. And the one compliment that I could give is if you do it, you go back and you do it again. I've done that one more times than any of them that I've done. But number two, and a very, very close second, if it's a 1A and a 1B, is the Algiers Point Walk.
It better be. Yes.
You know, I knew that
represent.
Was coming.
Little West Bank action. I'd never walked on the levee over there. And if you've never done it, I highly recommend it. You are not going to get a better view of the city of New Orleans than walking on the levee on the West Bank on Algiers Point. And when you're walking through those neighborhoods in old Algiers, you realize, wow, you could be walking down Esplanade Avenue or somewhere, you know, in the city of New Orleans, and you'd never think that it was on the West Bank. And you are, and then you walk up on the levee and you see the city out in front of you with the river. It is fantastic. And I highly, highly recommend it. And like you said, Jeff, you can go to pelicans.com, neworleanssaints.com. You know, Google Walks with Graf and all. I did 8 of them in that time period. And in the couple of months, I did one a week for 2 months to try to, you know, pass the time while we were during all this and to keep busy. And I'm really glad I did this. And I got back to my writing roots which I had some. You know, my grandmother, who we talked about earlier, was an English teacher. So I kind of had a little background in writing, and I was kind of glad I got back into it again. And but those two walks really have been my favorites, other than the the Uptown staple.
I think it's one of Todd's favorites because I don't know if this is public knowledge, but I'm going to make it public knowledge. But he now knows where Sarah Connor lives.
That's right.
The Terminator fame.
Linda Hamilton, baby. I'm waiting for her to be Hamilton outside on the balcony when I walk by.
In Algiers Point.
And I'd yell out, yeah, Linda Hamilton. Sarah Connor.
Yes.
But she hasn't been outside. She hasn't done it yet.
No, she's not been outside. But yeah, that's like a landmark. Todd's like, oh, just walking by Sarah Connor's house. So he knows where Sarah Connor lives, and she's always going to live. Like, she always survives the Terminator movies. But anyway, we're now rambling. Danielle's doing her own eye roll.
Is Danielle even still with us?
Exactly. Exactly. She ducked out. But Todd, appreciate it, buddy. And look, get ready. Todd's going to be back on the radio call. So want to thank again our producer, Danielle. Want to thank Todd Graffinini for jumping on the Duncan Holder podcast. Once again, theathletic.com/Duncan Holder, 40% off of your first year annual subscription. You can get all of our podcasts, all of our great written coverage as well in New Orleans and across the country and across the globe. And of course, you can also subscribe, rate, review, all those good things to the Duncan Holder podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. So for Jeff Duncan, I'm Larry Holder. Thanks for joining us once again on the Duncan Holder podcast here on the Athletics Podcast Network.